Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
Welcome to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm Chad King, and I'm here joined tonight by one Eric Nathanson and one Ben, what's your last name? Fried Duck? Fried Lee? What is it?
Lee's fine, and I'm glad that you only thought of bringing one of us around because I don't know if this podcast could handle two of each.
Exactly. How you doing, Eric?
Doing well, guys. How y'all doing out there?
Fantastic. You're like 3 hours into the future, so what do we have in store for us?
What's it like over there?
It's nothing exciting, trust me.
Nothing exciting.
I'm looking forward to that. I could stand with some nothing exciting. It's kind of been at times an eventful and at times a completely uneventful offseason, to say the least.
No, exactly. So we are not with Willie tonight. It looks like he has witnessed the Warriors absolutely destroying the Washington Wizards 107-76. Holy crap. 31-point victory.
That's actually almost painful. That's so impressive.
That is like, that would have been so much fun to see.
Yeah, right?
But he's not going to be joining us tonight. But unlike the Warriors' success lately, the Giants have not been encountering much success in spring training this year. And, you know, look, we all don't put a whole lot of stock into spring training, but the Giants do have the worst record by far out of all 30 teams in spring training.
There is that.
So
little detail.
There is that. But again, remember last year, they got off to obviously the best start in Major League Baseball at, you know, 42-21 or whatever it was. After
and then
that
tanked.
Yeah, and after that period, they had the worst record in Major League Baseball for almost 2 months. And they wait, did they win the World Series or something? Something like that? So
they can't have.
So clearly have. We're talking about spring training here, and no one cares about the actual record itself. You look back in the history, and the Giants have had poor spring training records and won the World Series. Other teams have done the same thing. But one thing that I'm concerned about, and I don't have the direct quote here from Bruce Bochy, is that he is just looking for clean baseball. He's looking for good at-bats, clean defense, those kinds of things. He has not been witnessing them. And they have not been knocking runners in from, second and third base, that kind of thing. So he's concerned. And Bochy is, man, he is a man of chill. He does not get worked up. I mean, the guy is like,
a lot for him to get worried.
Exactly.
We had to be in the middle of like a month and a half, like just complete collapse slump before he was finally like, yeah, guys are starting to press a little bit.
So, I mean, again, I'm not completely worried, but at the same time, I mean, I do have concern because of the Giants with their injury issues and heading into an odd year, which I think it's one of those unspoken things. No one is completely superstitious, you know, and I'm an objective person, but at the same time, they keep proving this legend.
That's
it's
the problem, though, Chad, is by nature you look for empirical evidence, and the empirical evidence is that we just really grind these odd years into the ground.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
by empirical, I mean literally we just all have had to watch it for the last like 5 year stretch.
Yeah, and you look at 2011 with Buster Posey's injury and 2013 with the other injuries, and now we have 2015 and we get Hunter Pence, you know, breaking his arm. And no fault of his own, just bad luck. And although he should be back before May 1st, at the same time, you know, that's a putting it behind the eight ball. And considering the fact that they just barely made the wild card last year, his absence could make the difference between two or three wins over the year, which could make the difference between a wild card position or what have you. And Ben, you were there for the actual injury, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I was just up the left field line, and you saw it, and you vaguely sort of maybe heard it. I wouldn't say that it was like a clear and like big sound or anything, because that would have been terrible, but just, you know, you've seen Pence get hit before, and he gets kind of tagged, and, you know, he shakes his hand a little bit, maybe he hops around for a second, and then but usually not even that. Usually he gets hit and goes, and just kind of walks over to first base at like a light trot. This time, you saw the ball kind of bounce off of him, and I thought he had chopped it, because I thought that he had sort of checked his swing a little bit, and he just dropped to the ground and sort of hung there for a second before he kind of slowly made his way up to his feet. And all of a sudden I was like, wait, I've never seen Hunter do that before. This does not seem like a good sign at all. And sure enough, he goes to first base, he's standing there for a bit. And then you can see as a precaution, they just pull him out of the game. And then moments later, I'm looking at Twitter and I'm just seeing tweets like, this isn't good. This isn't good. This isn't good. Oh, they broke him.
They literally broke him. Yeah,
they literally broke him. I mean, on the bright side, Scottsdale Stadium, for anyone that hasn't been there, is literally across the street from a hospital.
Right.
Yep. So when they say they're taking Hunter Pence to the hospital for x-rays, if they use an ambulance, I would laugh so damn hard.
Well, literally, it's the same, it's right with there, the dude can walk. His heart incident, they literally walked him across the street.
Well, yep. To go, I don't know if they walked him per se, but I guess they probably did. Yeah, it is right there.
Well, you know, the irony is that the Cubs pitcher who did break his arm, and it was inadvertent, you know, it wasn't obviously on purpose. He's a career minor leaguer. He's not had a cup of coffee with the major leagues yet, but his agent is the same agent as Hunter Pence. So it was one of those things where it was just like, are you kidding me? You know?
Really? Like, yeah, can you imagine being that agent to see, like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. About this whole thing? But it was actually really cool to see, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking out on the guy's name, but he, you know, tweeted out saying he was very apologetic for that, what happened. And, you know, Hunter tweeted him back with everyone witnessing
it happens,
saying, hey man,
yeah,
it happens. It's baseball. No hard feelings. And that's true. I mean, obviously the guy wasn't trying to hit Hunter, so.
And you also wouldn't expect Hunter to react in any other way but that.
In
he
any
kind of
other
rolls
way.
The punches better than anybody else.
Yeah.
The nice thing is, there's never a nice thing when somebody breaks their arm, but the nice thing is it happened right at the beginning of spring training.
Yeah, it was Corey Black. That's right.
Corey Black. Thanks. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's what Hunter actually highlighted. He said, hey, look, if this is going to happen, it's best to happen now, right at the beginning of spring training, because I can come right back after the beginning of the season. And he said he's a very, quote, fast healer. You know, he's broken a finger before, and it was the same thing. They said he was going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, and he came back in 4. Now, there's no expectation that he's going to come back in 4 now, but
no,
at the same time, no one's expecting 8 at this point.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition. Yeah, I mean, Hunter tends to like to surprise people.
He's already in a smaller cast. They took the big cast off, and it's like a smaller air cast now. So he's already progressed pretty well.
Yeah, it was just a hairline fracture. So it's really just kind of, you know, pumping that kale into him and making sure that that fracture heals as well as it can. But as far as his replacement, I mean, granted, it might only go 2-3 weeks into the beginning of the season. But we got Aoki Pagan. Now we need to talk about him, because he's got some back issues, and that's kind of scary. But even if Pagan's healthy, we got Pagan and Aoki and Blanco. So are those the three that we're considering is going to start the season? And if Pagan is going to be on the shelf for the beginning of the season, what are we looking at, guys? I mean, are we looking at, like, Maxwell out there? I mean, who's going to be the outfield on April 6th?
Nothing good. The rumor at the moment, one of the potential rumors is Aoki, Blanco, Brandon Belt. Actually, that's a one possibility. Or else, alternatively, you could be
Ishikawa.
Yuck.
Could be looking at Ishikawa, Ishikawa, Aoki, Jared Parker, or Justin Maxwell. Yeah, I mean,
Well, the problem with all that
sounds like a bad video game, guys. I mean,
Aoki has to play right field then, though. Aoki stunk in right field when they put him out there for a few days. They kind of were like, he should stay in left.
Brandon Belt actually said he felt like he'd pick up quicker in right field. And while our right field is really hard and it's a pain, and Belt's left field since have been somewhat ungainly, to say the least. The thing about putting Belt in left that I never thought of before is that Belt is used to seeing the ball come up from the right side of the field. So he knows what routes it's going to kind of, you know, his routes are probably would be a little bit better from that side because he tends to already have an expectation when the ball comes off the bat of where it's going to be and what it's going to do a little bit. You know, it's not necessarily that he's going to know intrinsically because he's normally, you know, like 100 feet closer, but that at least he'll be more comfortable going, okay, ball gets hit off this side. I know what I'm doing. I just have a lot farther out. Like comfort level.
It's going to come down to Pagan again. That's the really screwed up part. It's going to come down to whether or not Pagan's healthy as to how they can shift this around. And I guess he's playing in a minor league game. Maybe it was today or tomorrow that he's finally supposed to get back again. Because if Pagan's healthy, then you can just stick Blanco in right field and Aoki in left, and okay, everybody's set. I mean, we all know Blanco's played right before. The Matt Cain perfect game, he was in right field for it. He made that catch. You know, so he could handle it out there. We know Blanco's good out there. But if Pagan's not healthy, then it throws just a gigantic wrench into everything.
Well, because we can go down one outfielder and maybe make it. Going down two outfielders is kind of a tough proposition.
Yeah. And this seems to be a problem that they're going to continue to have as long as Angel Pagan is on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a ton of, like, we've had depth, and at the same time, we don't have any depth in the outfield. You know, like, we don't have any major upcoming prospects that are almost major league ready, except, I mean, like, even Gary Brown, borderline. Justin Maxwell had a pretty decent couple of years with the Astros a while back, so I mean, I'm not super upset about the idea of Justin Maxwell, but I'd prefer not to, you know?
He's played all over the outfield during spring here. I mean, before today's game, he's put in like 29 innings in left, 13 in center, and 38 innings out in right field.
Yeah, and Maxwell looks surprisingly good in center when I saw him when I was out there, to be honest. Like, taking decent routes, really, like, laying out for the ball. I mean, I wasn't expecting Maxwell to look decent in center, and, you know, I'll take it. He surprised me.
Well,
Gary Brown's a possibility, but he's just not hitting.
No, he's just not hitting at all. Not at all. I don't think.
And Daniel Carbonell, on the other hand, is just nowhere close to major league ready. He's still a bit of a hacker. He's getting better, but he's still kind of a hacker.
He's very rough at the best.
Mm-hmm.
At best. So, you know, the Giants obviously have the worst record in spring training so far. We're all not totally worried about the record, but you do want to look.
They also just don't look good. That's I think what's hurt is that offensively they once in a while they'll have some moments, but for the most part they just haven't looked good.
No, they haven't. And, you know, obviously Bochy has
possibly accepting
his concerns. But even on the pitching side, I'm going to throw some numbers at you guys. And I know these are small sample sizes and, you know, some of the veterans anyway.
We'll be saying small sample size for the first month. We need something to talk about.
You know, through July at least, right?
We need something to talk about. Let's have it.
And the vets, you know, look, they're working on stuff. I mean, it's common knowledge that guys who have a secured spot in the rotation are working on pitches. They're working on location. They're working on a new thing.
Getting release
whatever.
Points.
Right. And so they're not concerned about their numbers. Unlike the young guys who are like only concerned about the numbers because that's the only way they're going to make the team or potentially make the team down the road.
Right.
But that being said, I'm going to throw some ERAs at you. 5.84. Who has that one? Starter.
Bogey.
5.6.
Sorry, I'm looking at the page. Maybe I won't.
Yeah, well, if you're looking at the page, you know these anyway. So 5.65.
Our listeners don't know, but we're cheating.
All right. 5.65. Don't say it, Eric.
5.65. Kane?
Mad bum.
Yeah.
But to be fair, he looked really good the other day.
Oh, no. Exactly.
But that's our
just,
point, really,
just
though.
Throwing out the numbers here. 6.75.
Actually, the way they've been pitching, that sounds like Peavy.
That's exactly Peavy.
Yep.
7.88.
7.88. Jeez. Santiago Casilla? I mean,
actually,
you nailed it. But that's not who I was asking about. He shares the ERA with Tim Lincecum.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They have identical ERAs.
They both have 7.78 ERAs.
Yeah, and they both pitched 8 innings. That's kind of weird.
And then 9.82.
Jeez, is that Kane?
That is Matt Kane.
Yeesh.
So here's the thing. Look.
I mean, you know, looking at it like that, yeah, it sounds terrible. But realistically, you know, nobody looks at a spring training number for a vet and says, well, that's how that year is going to go.
No, and I get that. But when you look at Bum, Timmy, Vogey, Kane, Peavy, I mean, we just listed off 5 ERAs. None of them are lower than 5.65. Why isn't one of them lower than 5.65? Just one. You would think, like, just random chance, one of those guys would be lower than that. And I know all 5 of them are going to be lower than that for the regular season. We all know this.
Answer, Rags is just trolling the hell out of the rest of the Texas League. Rags just like, all right, fellas, go out there.
I mean, look, even
look real good on three guys, and then I just want you to groove one down the middle so they think that you're terrible.
Even Timmy at his, you know, worst is, you know, still at 5, right? So, I mean, clearly none of these guys are going to be at these levels in August. But at the same time, it's like, well, okay, can't just one of them be under 5.6? I mean, this is... It's a little weird, but
why couldn't McCovey have hit the ball just 1 foot higher?
Yeah,
sorry, Charlie Brown.
1962.
Sorry, Charlie Brown. Yeah,
but you know, guys like those. You know, Kane though, he's a perfect example. He has the highest ERA there out of that lot that I just mentioned. But at the same time, he has felt, according to him, magnificent, better than he's ever felt. People have been talking about the snap on his curve, the zip on his fastball. Yep. You know, all that stuff. And so,
or even just like the way that that Tim has been starting to do, you know, the same thing that he did before with no strikeouts, but in 10, you know, got 10 of his last 11 out in his last outing without striking one out.
Yeah, his last outing, he only gave up one run and 2 hits in whatever 4 innings. And yeah, no strikeouts, but at the same time, he had very poor contact, which is great. So
that's what we wanted from Tim Lincecum for a long time, to be honest.
Well, and look, let's all be honest. Even his Cy Young years, his spring ERA was always above 7. I mean, it didn't matter. He always experimented during spring training. So, again, most of these guys, you can't take too much stock in it. I just expected one of them, to be under 5.6. It's a little weird.
Can anything make me feel better?
Something I could point to and go, oh, well, he's the outlier. Okay, yeah, that's cool.
Someone make me feel better.
Yeah.
And again, currently the answer turns out to be like Brett Bocci. You're like, well,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Brett Bocci.
And he's only getting thrown into
1.5.
I am not even looking at the roster, you guys.
You're dead on. Except 1.5. He's always in mop up time against the minor leaguers, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course. That's the problem with Santiago Casillas. He's not, or sometimes he is too, and he's still got a 7.78. Not pretty.
This is the
His
largest.
Stuff doesn't seem to be breaking.
This is the largest ERA I've ever seen in my life, actually, aside from Infinity, of course.
I remember a 56 at one point that somebody had. Literally during the first week.
There's a San Francisco Giant that has a much higher ERA than that right now.
Is it at like 200?
Easy.
Very close. Travis Blackley.
Oh, Travis.
1.35 ERA. Not
literally
one
got brought
not
up for
1.35.
Like, but like
135 earned runs per 9 innings.
Like batters faced though. Like none.
Yeah. Well, he has one third of an inning pitched.
Yeah, he got out.
And 5 earned
his
runs.
His whip is 18.
Yeah, his whip is 18.
He successfully got out.
While giving up 5 runs, although he lost one.
Just out.
Those are fantastic.
Congratulations, you got out. Like, that's not...
Will Ferrell got an out. I'm just saying.
Will Ferrell did not get an out. Well, Will Ferrell struck out. Will Ferrell got a walk.
No, what I mean is that when he was pitching for the Dodgers...
Yeah, he got an out.
Did he in fact get an out?
Technically speaking,
he got an assist.
It was a bunt. He threw that 35 mile an hour Ephus pitch. in which the Padre bunted right back to him, and he fielded it cleanly and threw him out at first. So he has one third of an inning in spring training.
So I was suitably impressed by his actually having to range to his left to get a ground ball into the outfield.
You know what? Yeah. So he that actually, as an angel, he fielded that ball.
That looked halfway decent. He even came up with it well, which I was like, ah, you don't look like a total idiot out there.
He came up and like pretty much crow hopped that shit out to the cutoff man, and the guy took a big turn and actually turned back to first. I mean, he actually held the guy
at first. So I was like, ah, ah, there you go.
Yeah. No, it was actually a really good play. So he had that play as a pitcher. Which wasn't bad. And he actually fouled a ball off of Gene Machi.
Yep. Gene Machi got pissed and struck him out.
And then he struck him out. And then he caught him the next inning for that intentional walk. But
that's right. I was thinking of that intentional walk. But yeah, that was great.
Hey, look, you know, he threw a 92-mile-an-hour fastball, and a 43-year-old Will Ferrell, you know, Hollywood actor, fouled it off.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
you made some kind of contact. That's impressive.
It was horrible contact, but he made contact. Right. I mean, could you imagine any of the three of us actually making contact? I mean, honestly. And I played baseball, but I absolutely admit there's no way I would have made contact.
Just nope.
I'd like to think I could have, so I'm just going
to. I'd like to think I could have. But I would never presume I could.
I would love to imagine that I could have, but by the time I started swinging, the ball would probably be in the mitt. And I would be like, God, that mitt is loud.
I threw cans through the zone, but that was 10 years ago. That was like 15 years ago.
I have to admit, seeing guys like
on my back porch,
you know, Garth Brooks and Tom Selleck and some of these, you know, actors and celebrities over the years that have been able to participate in spring training, getting a few at-bats here and there. That's something that I would have just loved to have had. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I mean, would you, you know, I don't care about your current level of skill. Would you have been willing to go out there to just take, you know, one or two at-bats against a pro? I mean, would you do that?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
if I ended up looking like an idiot, you know, the fact that I've been invited in would usually mean that they were all going to forgive me and then expect me to like sing a country song later or whatever it is that I did. But
yeah, I mean, you know, what Will Ferrell did was great because it raised so much money for cancer, children and everything like that. And, you know, what was really sad is I heard a lot of people who were upset about it because, you know, they were complaining about how it, you know, altered the game, delayed the game, and took at bats away from the you know, career single A minor leaguer and all that shit. It's like, wait, no, look at the bigger picture, guys. I mean, he's raising money for a really, really good cause. It's not just for him. So, you know, obviously, to me, I thought it was a fantastic thing, and I'm a Will Ferrell fan as well. But at the same time, it's like, okay, no. Yeah, he delayed a couple of games, but like Bruce Bochy, the way he put it, he's like, hey, look, it delayed our game because they were one of the last games.
They had to like sit there. They had to like wait.
Yeah, it was like a 30-minute delay.
Yeah, they were the second. They were the second to last one. They had to wait for him to helicopter over.
Yeah, they expected him in the fifth inning. He didn't come till the ninth, and they had to delay the game to make sure that he could actually play. But he said, hey, look, if he was going to raise $1 million for cancer, it's worth us waiting 30 minutes.
Yeah,
he just nailed it. He nailed it, and I don't understand all these trolls who are so upset about Will Ferrell. It wasn't a fame grab. It wasn't like, look at me, you know, I'm a good baseball
Will Ferrell,
player.
If there's one thing that Will Ferrell needs, it's a fame grab.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's definitely not famous enough yet. He's really going to have to work on that.
Clearly,
you heard about this unknown kid that went around to a bunch of baseball parks, and
clearly
like,
he cares about what people think about his baseball skills.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
I mean, he came really out dressed as Little Debbie on, you know, The Tonight Show this week. So, I mean, you know, it's like, come on, guys.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
He's doing what he can for.
Now I'm hungry. Thanks, Chad.
Kids. Oh, yeah, I know.
I think it'd be fun to run around the outfield, you know, as a player. I think it'd be fun to go play center field or left field or something like that. Nowhere in the infield because the ball would come off the bat like a rocket. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just an average Joe. I think it'd be fun. Like when he was in left field, like you said, he got some action. I think that would be fun. I think that would be the most fun, even more fun than hitting.
Well, yeah, and he was in center field for the Angels. He got the one ground ball. He saw a home run sail over his head. And when he played for the Padres after he pitched for the Dodgers.
Chris Bryant crushed that one,
by
the way.
Yeah, he watched another home run sail over his head in right field. So his action in the outfield mostly was watching a ball sail into the stands.
Will Ferrell, career rubbernecker.
Yeah. Which was fantastic. I mean, yeah, because he only had that one assist as a pitcher.
Isn't this why the Phillies used to call Kyle Kendrick Whiplash?
Yeah. There it goes.
it was a really nice, not gesture or stunt per se, but just like what they did to raise, the money that they did. But I still get a kick out of it gave me a good appreciation for how much Will Ferrell actually does kind of either appreciate the game of baseball or how much his publicists do, but either way, it was fine.
Yeah.
He was wearing number 19 the entire time.
Except for the Padres.
Because you can't wear number 19 for the Padres. Mm-hmm. And he showed up in number 20, and that was just the classiest thing I think he could have done right there.
I love that.
For those that might not know, that's because that's Tony Gwynn's number, although we're assuming everybody does remember that.
It's fair. It's the late and recently passed Tony Gwynn.
Right.
Relatively recently, but yeah, what a shame. And so well played by Will Ferrell. Don't show up at a Padres game with number 19.
What was great is that after he finished the Giants game, he had his Giants jersey on and he got helicoptered to the Padres Dodgers game. And so he showed up behind home plate wearing his Giants uni, and both Padres and Dodgers fans in that stadium just rained down boos on him. So that was fantastic. And he's an LA boy. He's a USC boy and he's a Dodger guy. So
he's just trolling at that point.
I mean
in a hurry mostly. Like they probably didn't have the uniform ready on the helicopter with him. But
yeah, exactly. So that was just really cool.
I love that the Giants one actually said Ferrell 19 because so many of his other ones were just the number.
Yeah.
Like a spring training walk up.
Yep.
And with the Giants, Murph or whoever is running the clubhouse this year actually went ahead and sewed on a Ferrell.
Yeah, put his whole full name on there. Yeah, it was great.
It's great. I was like, I wonder, can I buy that jersey if I go through MLB.com? Ferrell, Will, number 19.
Yeah, I haven't actually checked. Is he listed in the stats for spring training?
I highly doubt it.
He's got a baseball reference page.
Does he really?
Have a baseball reference
with
page.
Every single number from
the whole day. Oh, my
That's
God.
Awesome.
That
Let
is
look at hitting
like all
here.
10 numbers. Oh, well, that is fantastic.
He didn't hit. Oh, there it is. Ferrell, Will, SF, catcher, games, 1, at-bats, 0, fielding. Let's see if I can find him.
Oh, my God. That is too awesome. I haven't even checked that.
He doesn't. But because he doesn't have a fielding record because of his it was an intentional walk, he's not listed there. He is listed under hitting though, if you look.
Well, yeah, he had 2 strikeouts.
Yeah. No, he's listed under fielding as a Giant with as a one game at catcher.
Yeah, his intentional walk, right, that he caught.
Yeah, the intentional walk he caught. Yep. And if you click on that, it actually shows him as a Will Ferrell 19 shortstop. because of Campaneris. Yeah.
Well, he started with the A's, exactly.
Right, right.
Yeah.
As you do.
Could you imagine? I mean, I it was so disappointing to not see a ground ball hit to him that first inning with the A's.
I wanted it so bad.
I know. We all did.
Yeah, and it's great. It's his spring training stats, last 3 seasons. It just says 2015, Cubs, 2015, Oakland, 2015, Arizona, 2015, San Diego. It's great. If you get a chance, take a look at Will Ferrell's stats page.
Oh, my gosh. I'm looking at baseballreference.com.
It's outstanding.
And it's 19, 20.
Outstanding.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, did you see the transactions?
They're all listed there, too.
All on March 12th. Signed by the A's.
My gosh.
As an undrafted amateur free agent. Traded to Seattle. joined LA Angels, traded Chicago Cubs for a washing machine, traded Arizona Diamondbacks for a churro dog and a D-bat dog, claimed off waivers by Cincinnati Reds, Norm McDonald released. Granted, oh my God! Traded to San Francisco Giants for unknown compensation. traded to Seattle Mariners for comedic actor to be named later. Oh, that is fantastic! Oh,
you're gonna have to put this into the show notes. That's amazing.
Oh, that is great! Oh that my is God!
Amazing.
Oh, fantastic!
All right. We should probably start talking about real baseball again.
Yeah, I think so. We'll duck back over to that.
It's not because I'm not. It's funny because I'm not really a Will Ferrell fan when it comes to his comedy, but I was so thrilled to see all this. And then here I go.
Well, you know, you always like seeing that that like overlap with your favorite thing. You know, like it's like having that random like I think NBA basketball player that appeared as a Klingon on Star Trek. Like, yes, do it.
Right. I'm getting a kick out of the fact that Counting Crows are fans of the Warriors.
Yes,
during Warriors games, I see them tweeting about it all the time.
I mean, a lot of people are fans of the Warriors right now that weren't, you know, like 3 months ago.
Hey, I'm a Bulls fan, and I think they're going to stink come the playoffs. They even clinched the playoff berth tonight. I'm on the Dubs bandwagon. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Hey, you know, that's what bandwagons are there for, and we've always been pretty bandwagon-friendly on this show, for good reason. The bandwagon fans are there because that's how you get someone to start liking a team. You know, my buddy Marcus, who is a diehard fan of many things in many different places, originally was a Celtics fan for a long time because the Dubs just, you know, were just heartbreakers over and over when he was a kid. He's come back to the Dubs now and has always, you know, lightweight paid attention to them, but it was so painful. Was never really a baseball fan. Got into the Giants in 2010 and has stuck with them, including through the really terrible years, has stuck with them for the last 5 years. That's what bandwagoning leads to if you don't just, like, shout the bandwagoners right back out of the park. So the
really terrible years. 13 was the only terrible year. 11, they still had a good team. You know, it's like...
Well, 11 was the year that we had to all watch terrible things happen to Buster Posey, so... It was a rough year for very specific reasons more than for overall reasons. 13 was just a terrible year. Yeah.
That was.
Yep.
I mean, it was on the field. Personally, I loved 13, but that was my
own 13 thing. As a team was fun. And, well, and you had a good 2013, absolutely.
Well, we even talked about it then. It was late August, and the crowd was going nuts for a team that was in, like, you know, fourth place at that time.
Absolutely. And that's why you keep the bandwagoners around, as they enjoy being around to, you know, see all the fun stuff. Now, as far as other people that we're keeping around, we've got a couple of spots open on this roster, and I still can't, like, we've now established that no one is really making much of a clamor to try and keep any of their spots, like, at all, with the possible exception, I will say, of Matt Duffy.
Oh,
yeah.
Has actually been pretty dang great. Yeah. Which was, of course, exciting. You know, I'm a big Matt Duffy fan. He's awkward and he's fun. And he has so much more hustle than I think we really expected when he first came up. And really, dude's got some afterburners when he really, really needs them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, there's a lot of utility in Duffy, I think. And I would not at all be surprised to see Duffy stick around on the roster, in which case, good for him, or to start the year at AAA. It's a possibility as well.
Well, it's because Adrianza is out of option, so they either have to, you know, outright him at that point if they're going to put Duffy on the roster. Because it was looking like Arias and Adrianza were going to be the 4-5, or the, you know, the two backup infielders. You know, at this point, but I mean, Duffy, he's got to make it. I personally want to see him on the roster. There's been talk about throwing him out in the outfield.
Well, yeah, and I would at this point I would take Duffy over, you know, Adrianza. So, I mean,
in fairness, you know, Adrianza has just kind of never quite managed to impress in the last, like, year or two. And he's batting .194 right now, so he's not making a big spring case as somebody who needs to be making a big spring case.
Last year, I wanted him to be the starting second baseman. Now that's, you know, if it wasn't for Joe Panik, I think we'd be clamoring for Duffy to be the starting second baseman.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, Joe Panik came in and solved all of that forever. Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. I mean, if we were in a different situation, you know, it could happen with Matt Duffy at second base. He's been getting a lot of playing time both at second and at short. You know what the other random one I didn't write into the notes that we have here are? Adam Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be interesting because, honestly, Duvall has not looked good. But they've been giving him a lot of time at third base, and he's a right-handed power hitter. Right. Our right-handed power hitters at the moment are pretty much Belt and Pence, and we know where that's going. Or not Belt, sorry, Posey and Pence. And we know where that's going right now, which is half missing. So,
well, even Posey hasn't been showing much power this spring.
That is true. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Posey's batting a 208, but, you know, Posey's batting a spring 208, so there is a certain caveat out there.
I feel like every time I'm able to catch a game, I'm seeing him roll over on balls to the left side, just like he was doing in the World Series last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, it's Buster Posey, and let's, you know, fear not, Captain America will come through, but...
Right. Don't worry, the shield will magnetically reattach to his arm sooner or later.
Absolutely, but Duffy has been impressive. I mean, he's got pop that I didn't expect him to have. He knocked one, I think it was Sunday, against the Angels. And
that wasn't even his first one this season.
No, and it went to the same place Pujols had just hit one off of Bumgarner. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't just an eker. It was,
That was his second home run of the season. I mean, that puts him in second behind Belt.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Like, it's Brandon Belt, and then, like, right behind him with two home runs each are Joe Panic, Matt Duffy, and Daniel Carbonell.
Yep.
Daniel Carbonell has had 14 at-bats and two home runs. This is why I brought him up earlier.
No,
not possible this year, but someday.
He's raw.
Maybe he'll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had a long-term solution in the outfield since Bonds left out in left field, so maybe Carbonell will be it in a couple years.
Yeah, I mean, Pence is as close as we've gotten, and even then, I don't know. It's nothing that's felt like a long-term call-up solution, for sure. That's what we all hoped Gary Brown would be, but, you know, we'll see. And the fact that I'm still saying we'll see when Gary Brown is turning, like, 25 is probably not a great sign.
Yeah, that ship is starting to leave the dock, to
little
be
bit.
Honest. Yeah.
A little bit.
So is there a place on the roster for Ishikawa then?
You know, I mean, I feel like there – I don't know that there's room on the roster, but I feel like there needs to be as well, you know? Ishikawa has shown that he's versatile.
When we talked to him at Media Day, you know, and I posed the question, I said – so now that you're guaranteed a spot for opening day, and he stopped me and he said, whoa, no, I don't have a spot guaranteed. Now, yeah. I understand.
Like, he's in a better position to make the team than he was in previous years,
exactly.
For sure.
And
more of an incumbent this way.
And I didn't mean to assume anything, but at the same time.
No, and I don't think he was upset about it, but he did. He made a very good point.
He made a very good point, and I love his attitude because he can't ever assume that he has a spot on this team.
No, and I mean, in fairness to him, he's been through too much, I think, to assume that he has a spot on any team. And it's, you know, just as well that he's going out there and that he's going to work his butt off.
Yeah, but I think the fact that Pence is down really, I mean, it doesn't guarantee him a spot, but I think it solidifies a spot. I do. I think because Belt is flexible in the outfield at first base.
And just like so is Ishikawa.
Exactly.
Right.
Just like he is. So I think
you've
that kind of
opens up
that
flexibility. You've got two guys that are decent defenders. Yeah, two guys that are decent defenders that are versatile, that are covering the same two spots that are essentially interchangeable that way.
Yeah.
That's really handy to have around. And so there's absolutely a strong case for Ishikawa to make the team. Probably over Duvall, despite needing right-handed power. I think, you know, if out of the two of them, based on the way that they've been hitting and that they've hit since they've been up, Ishikawa has history and tenure, and the Giants tend to appreciate that besides what he already did as being Travis Ishikawa and all.
Yeah.
So yeah. That worked out pretty well.
I think the thing that kind of screws him a little bit, though, is the fact that Aoki, they tried him in right for a little bit, and they're not too impressed with him, and they're going to shift him back to left. And it's not like Ishii's going to suddenly shift over to right field.
No, although, but if Belt does, then you've got Ishikawa at first, and that keeps you from putting somebody at first who's going to be a weaker first defender. So, I mean, it depends on it. A lot of it really has to shake out as we see who moves where later on.
There's a lot of ifs and buts with this team. There really are.
Yeah. Well, you know, if Corey Black gave us a really big if when he threw a ball in the wrong spot, and that's just when.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
it's been an interesting ride since then. But
Travis Ishikawa,
can I just say that
a starting outfielder for the playoff roster?
Yep.
Last year. So
every game but game 7.
You know, it's one of those things where you got to look back and, like, I know a lot of people go, like, Travis Ichikawa's not an outfielder. Okay, well, he was an outfielder for the playoff roster, and they won the World Series. So
right, and he only honestly really looked terrible once.
Yeah, and yeah. It was that one.
We all noticed it because he looked terrible that one time and went, man, he really hasn't looked that bad, come to think of it.
Well, so. I was reading something the other day. He apparently played a bunch of games in the minors in the outfield as well. Did. So it wasn't like totally new to him.
Right.
And he showed it the other day. He made a really nice running catch the other day where he had to go. He was positioned more towards the line, and he had to go all the way into the hole by the wall. And he made a nice running catch. So he's got the agility and ability. It's just
And he's getting the routes more than you might expect from a first baseman thrown out into left, a.k.a. what happened when Brandon Belt went into left field. God, the routes were terrible, but he was trying so hard, and you know, it was hard not to appreciate that part.
See, my thing with Belt is, and I don't know how much this affects it because I'm not a major league ball player, but my thing with Belt is he's entering his age 27 season. He is really starting to look good at the plate. If he starts to shift around and has to shift his focus now on different things that he has to do, is that going to then translate at the plate and maybe hurt him a little bit because his focus might be split?
Are we making more problems than we're fixing?
Right, exactly, because this should be – I mean, last year was supposed to be his breakout year, and then he had the – you know, first he had the – what was it?
Right, then he got hurt, and then he got hurt, and then he
broke his thumb.
Either Scudero or Casilla clocked him in the head. Baseball.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, I really – this should be his – you know, age 27 season is always one of those markers for athletes in general, and you would think that this could be his breakout. I mean, I was just talking to some random guy here on the street in Florida, and he's like, oh, that first baseman you guys got, I really think he's going to have a great year. And I'm like, what is this guy know from anything? And apparently he sees that Belt. We all think Belt should have a good year. I don't want to see it get screwed up because he gets yanked around. And I think that was the concern 3 years ago.
That was a concern when he first came up in left field. And they were using him in left field for a little bit because they needed to put somebody there. Yeah. No,
well,
I agree.
You know, Mike Krutko expects that he's going to hit 30 home runs this year. Now, do you know how many National League players hit?
I mean, Belt expects he's going to hit like 75, right?
Well, of course. But how many National Leaguers hit 30 home runs last year?
Like two or three?
Three.
Yep.
That's it.
It's got to be what, like McCutchen and...
No, not even McCutchen.
Wow.
Yeah. Stanton, of course, is at 37. Sorry, I'm blanking out on the other two, but one was at 31, one was at 30. I mean, the fact of the matter is that 30 is the new 40. It really is, because of the power drop from the post-PED era. And
right,
so,
and also the advancements in pitching nowadays, too. You've got some really ridiculous pitchers out there.
And so Krutko, I mean, you know, look, we all love him. We do. But he's a homer, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking
he's not quite an unabashed homer once
like,
he's on the
okay,
air, but yes.
Look, it's possible, but not extremely likely. So, I mean, look, assuming that he doesn't get hit in the face and hit in the hand again this year, and he can play 150 games, I mean, I'm predicting 20 to 22. Well, what do you guys think?
I could see him hitting 25. I mean, he started off last year. He hit like, what, six in the first month or something like that? Belt was on a tear. You remember?
Oh, he was. Oh, he was absolutely on a tear.
Yeah, the one thing that could stop him was Zach Greinke. That was it. And that's not how you stop him, Zach Greinke. Damn it.
It was a great stat to start the season last year. He homered in every park the Giants played in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, he was fantastic last year. He was leading the major leagues in home runs when he went on the DL for the first time. So he was, you know, he was definitely on trajectory to hit 30 or whatever it was.
Certainly got his name out more than he had in the past, and that was a big deal.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You know, and you look at the power that the Giants lost this year with, you know, Michael Morse, you know, leaving the team and
Pablo,
and Panda leaving the team. But at the same time, you have to think of like Brandon Belt, who I think he had 9 home runs last year, but, you know, because of his injuries. If you have a healthy Brandon Belt, you got to go 20 plus. And
sure. I mean, 20 plus in 162 games the way he was hitting.
Yep.
Sure.
Absolutely. And so a lot of people are upset about that. Going, oh, well, we lost a lot of power, but at the same time, if Belt is healthy, it kind of replaces a lot of that power loss. And at the same time, you have back Matt Cain, who looks like he has his stuff back. despite a spring ERA, because we all know what that means.
We're ignoring spring ERA.
We're ignoring that right now.
We're going to temporarily ignore it long enough to make ourselves feel better, and then we'll move on.
You know, Jake Peavy was the Matt Cain replacement late in the year last year, but now they have both of them. So
And I mean, Peavy has shown that he can pitch pretty darn well at AT&T Park when given the opportunity. So
absolutely. So
there's a lot of unknowns and up in the airs, but that's always been the case for the Giants, and sometimes it pans out pretty well.
And you get guys like Aoki and McGee, who are doubles and line drive hitters, but at the same time, that plays right into the strengths of AT&T Park. So I absolutely believe as long as the Giants aren't at the bottom of the league of knocking guys in with runners in scoring position, which I know they've been obviously pretty bad this spring.
That's a good word for it.
Yeah,
bad.
It's going to play to their strengths. So hopefully, the loss of that power is not going to be as egregious as some people may think it may be.
Well, the way Bochy manages is to keep the line moving mentality. And we saw it in that series against St. Louis last year where they didn't, remember, the Giants aren't winning with any homers and blah, 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 and blah, 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 the runs thrown in stuff.
Right.
And I mean, they were still winning, and they were doing it mostly at home. They were manufacturing these runs and things like that. So it's to their strength. If McGee can shoot a gap and move a guy around, if Aoki can get on base or yank one down the line, I'm all for that. Who cares? The bottom line is, as long as they score.
Yeah, I mean, if we have to lead the league in runs derped in, I mean, we'll take it.
Derped in.
Well, I mean, the other thing is last year they did really good on two out hits. They really like all season long, they seemed to be their forte, especially during that run at the beginning of the season. I remember I was doing a running tally of that kind of stuff, and it was amazing to see. Who knows if that kind of stuff's going to still be around? It's not necessarily the clutch gene, but it's one of those things where you don't always need the long ball. Sometimes you just need to shoot that one ball through the hole.
Yeah, agreed. Well,
and if they can do that, then they'll be fine. I mean, like we said, Belt's going to be there for some power. Posey will have some power until it gets later in the year and his legs get tired. When Pence gets back, he'll be able to supply some power. And every now and then you've got Joe Panik is showing some power this spring.
Yeah, he's starting to show some flashes. I mean, he hit one or two last year. Maybe he'll manage at least like 10. Crawford, maybe 10. Crawford like 5. But it'll be just at the right time, half of them super clutch, and then two solos. It'll be one of those years. I don't know. I mean, that's most of what we're looking at right now. I mean, so enough things are set in the lineup, like infield's good and set. The rotation is largely set with maybe one exception, but we know it's coming from about two people, unless Yusmeiro Petit has a massive, massive spring. And so really, we're looking at the outfield and at the back end of the relief corps and just kind of going, well, guys, what you got? Let's see it. And
there's only really one bullpen spot up for grabs, because with the starting five after that, then in the pen, you've got Vogie, Petit, Romo, Casilla, Affelt, and who am I missing?
Lopez.
Yes, and Lopez. How did I miss Lopez? He's my guy. And so there's like one left. And, is it going to go down to Contos? Is it going to go to Machi?
Isn't
Contos out of options too?
Yes, I believe he is. I was just looking at this on the notes.
Yeah, I mean, it's safe to say that even though his last painful outing was riddled with errors on other people's parts and really isn't on him, Hunter Strickland is probably not going to be the last guy in the bullpen.
No, probably not.
Both Contos and Machi are out of options.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's either find a way to keep both or lose somebody.
Yeah. It's just like Travis is out of options. I'm looking at the list right now from the game notes from today. And the guys that are out of options are Adrianza, Arias, Blanco, Casilla, Cordier is out of options.
Oh, man.
Wow.
That surprised me. Yeah. That really surprised
me.
I did not
know that. Wow.
I didn't realize he'd been called up that many times, but I mean, Cordy has been around a while. In fairness,
he has. Holy moly!
And then the question becomes: are they going to carry three catchers like they did at the start of last season?
Yeah, yeah, because we have a good fight between Sanchez and
Susak.
Susak,
he's come back from getting that injection, and he threw two guys out yesterday. He hit a triple today, picked it right back up.
Yeah, and Sanchez, on the other hand, did manage to return himself into the Timmy Whisperer last game and go eight innings. So, I mean, you know, they both have definitely some strong points going on, and I wouldn't mind seeing us carry three, only because Sanchez and Susak both are, well, mostly Susak, are both decent weapons off the bench.
Yeah.
So,
what about, I don't know, this has been my thought for a while. I kind of feel like Susak's going to end up being that guy that they use in a trade to get some help at some point somewhere.
You know,
I thought it was going to be last year. I think it could happen this year.
I think it could, but I'm not convinced. They seem to like Susak a lot, and I think Susak is your get Posey to first base free card, potentially, if they find something to do with Brandon Belt, like the outfield or something. Because I think that Posey, they want to keep him at catcher as long as they can, but when you have a guy like Andrew Susak in the wings, you have the ability to force the issue a little bit and still be okay.
Yeah.
See, all these questions and things we're bringing up, I'm not like skeptical going into this season, but I feel like that this is the most question marks that the Giants have had. I actually put it out on Twitter the other day, and somebody, I thought maybe 09 was the last time we had this many question marks heading into a season, because even like 13 when they shit the bed.
13, they knew what they were doing at the beginning of the year, and then they shit the bed.
Right, they had everybody come back from the 12 team, so they knew what their lineup was. Everything was set. This year, there just seems to be so many question marks, and granted, the Hunter Pence injury doesn't help that.
Definitely. But the Hunter Pence injury really made it a lot worse, to be honest, because now you look out into the outfield and you're like, all right, so rotating cast of Mooks.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and then if Pagan stays healthy, I don't know. I feel like there are so many question marks. I'm not as confident heading into this season. And I mean, forget the odd, even year crap and stuff like that. I just don't feel as confident heading into the season that they have a major league ready team. There's just so many little moving parts right now. And we know how they work. We know that, you know, if Sabian needs to do something, he'll do it. You know,
I'm down to be surprised later. That would be great. Certainly not against it.
I mean, it was funny.
Please surprise me later, guys. Please.
Yeah, I was flipping through the media guide today, and like Sabian, all the good trades he's made, all the guys that he traded away, nobody really panned out, and yet we got like Pence and we got Scudero, and you know,
I was gonna say, with the exception of needing TJ, it's pretty much with Zach Wheeler.
Yeah, but even he's been a 500. I don't really look at win loss, but even he's been some days he's great, some days he's not type pitcher. And I know Giants fans are still screaming about that, but as we've all talked about, two more rings since Zach Wheeler got traded makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I complain about it a lot less nowadays. It's kind of like, yep, Zach Wheeler, you do you.
Yeah. Good luck, buddy.
Right.
Yeah, poor Zach. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, man, that's rough. And during spring training, too, like, oh, man. Just,
It's like an epidemic this year.
Yeah, I mean, didn't Yu Darvish get shut down with something like that? He did. Not
Marcus
UCL
Stroman.
Tear, but
Marcus Stroman up in Toronto had it happen.
Think
it was somebody else, too. It's
rough year. I mean, we're finally seeing Tanaka back. Harvey's starting to come back. Yeah, I mean, you've got a couple of the guys that looked really exciting last year who are starting to make their way back now. But it's like it's such a revolving door of pitchers lately. It kind of sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel bad because like when I saw that Zach Wheeler went down, it was that initial moment of.
You had a brief schadenfreude, didn't you?
Exactly. Total schadenfreude. Just, it was like, yeah. Oh God, that was horrible. Why did I think that?
Yeah. I will admit that the Mets have been so terrible and I like Wheeler enough. I didn't go through that one, but I totally see why you would have.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where, when they made that trade with Carlos Beltran for Carlos Beltran,
right.
You know, I would have bought all the stock in the world for Zach Wheeler. And when they traded him away, I was thinking, oh, I cannot believe you traded that dude away for a half a season of Carlos Beltran.
Maybe a half a season at most.
Yeah, maybe a half a season, not even that. And obviously every sign since then, before the injury, was pointing towards, the Mets got the better deal, better end of that deal. But at the same time,
the Mets still got the better end of that deal just based on what we got back more than anything else.
That's true. But, you know.
But, yeah, it does change looking at it a little bit, knowing, like, okay, so this happened and this happened. He's been like this and this happened.
But at the same time, you know, how many times have we seen players, not with two or three Tommy Johns, but with the first Tommy John, coming back a year and a half later being just as strong or stronger? So it'll, you know, it still could absolutely work out in the Mets' favor, you know, halfway through 2016 when he comes back. You know, we'll see what Matt Harvey does this year, because he obviously was, you know, at the pinnacle
Harvey
National
was
League pitching, and now he's going to be coming out this year. So,
right. Well, you know, Matt Harvey is basically a comeback player of the year award waiting to happen.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
We'll see.
Absolutely.
Oh man, have we about just like, were we scraping the bottom of the spring training barrel at this point, like, talking about pitchers that aren't ours?
Yeah, pretty much. I just wanted to ask one more question to you, Ben, before we wrap this up. What did you take away from your actual physical visit to Scottsdale this year? Because we could not make that. You were the only one from the TorchCast crew that actually made spring training.
It's because I work in retail and get to request days off that are contiguous. Okay, so I definitely I'll let's see. I'm going to fish out three things. One, outside of Old Town, Scottsdale has a lot of hair salons, and that should tell you something about Scottsdale. I also passed a place that said it had been making quality fake diamonds since 1972, and I really wasn't sure what to make of that. I assume they mean cubic zirconia, because it's like, is that something to be proud of?
Yeah.
But
gotta be known for something.
Gotta be known for something. Two, the Giants spring training stadium, like many spring training stadiums, I imagine, is this really interesting feel of, it's just bigger than a minor league park, but not so much bigger that it doesn't feel like a minor league park. There's not that much room there. It's a lot quieter at times. You know, there's definitely that sense of, like, so here's the grandstands, and then here's these, like, rickety bleachers that aren't, well, they're not that rickety, but, I mean, they're a little farther out, and then just this massive lawn that you can just, the lawn that you can sit on, there are tickets for just the lawn that you can buy. That definitely sets it apart from a minor league stadium, but you just get this group, like, sitting in the lawn, just, like, covered in people, just watching baseball. And the vibe is completely different from being at AT&T Park, where not only is it usually freezing, it's also, you know, there's seats everywhere. It's just this massive crowd and everything else. But I think the most interesting thing for me watching spring training was really that the first day that I was there was like a weekday, and it wasn't super full. It was sparsely populated, and everybody was really just there to hang out. You know, you know that it's spring training. You want to see certain kids, and definitely the people who were sitting closer to the field were doing a lot of that. You know, we'd be talking, like, the one day that I did that, we'd be talking about, like, oh, this guy's up, or this guy's going to do this. Did you see that? Look at that guy go. But there were also, you know, tons and tons of people who were probably, honestly, probably Scottsdale locals being like, dude, there's a baseball game. We got something to do. And, There's so many bros. So many bros. It was terrible. Jen Cosgrove and I just kept talking about how many bros there were sometimes. But what was interesting, though, is that even during spring training, if the game gets close, Giants fans pay attention. And I think that's true of a lot of baseball fans in spring training, because you're just so excited for it to be back. But in the games where it actually started to get kind of close, or where there were guys on base and stuff, once it was towards the weekend, there were more people there. It got pretty loud for that stadium. But just, you know, if you were paying attention, you could really hear it, whatever was going on. You know, you could tell that the crowd was paying attention, especially on those weekends when it would get a little more full, and one of the games where it was actually kind of close and not just getting blown out by 9-0.
Right.
Again and again and again. But, you know, those are, I think, three of the things that I got out of it, because I didn't travel between parks, so I didn't learn the inevitable lesson, traffic sucks, going to most of the other parks in Phoenix.
Especially the Dodgers Park.
Yeah, I've also heard really terrible things about the Rangers-Royals Park in Surprise. It's like 40 minutes off the freeway or something.
Yeah, it's like the farthest one away from everything. The Dodgers Park, it's the parking lot is just terrible. It took us like an hour to get out of there after a game last year.
Nope. No thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, it's, you know, it, at the kick. It's a lot of fun, but you kind of have to go there knowing a little bit about what it is. And that whole vibe, like the whole vibe of spring training is completely different from the regular season. It's just, it's so much more laid back, but you get to watch the young guys who are going to be trying their asses off. And you also get to watch the vets who are like, I'm pretty set. It's kind of whatever. It's all good.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, I haven't been in a spring training since 2008. So, you know, it's been 7 years.
This is my first time. And it was it was a kick. It was a lot of fun.
You know what Scottsdale Stadium reminded me of when I was there? It reminded me of Wrigley Field. I know this sounds weird, but it just reminds me of basically your ticket is the price of admission to one giant cocktail party.
Yeah.
All right. I kind of see that. I mean, obviously, Wrigley Field is a bigger cocktail party, as you do.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, I haven't seen new Wrigley with the massive scoreboard in the bleachers, and I'm kind of afraid to whenever I finally make it out there. But I get what you mean, Wrigley, because Wrigley has not the lawn isn't the same. The bleachers have much more of an old timey feel to them because it's Wrigley, and so the lawn is very Scottsdale era Brona. I mean, you know. It's the lawn is really something else, but that feel of just like wide open spaces, just like sun over you in the summer, and just, you know, kind of like we're here both to watch baseball about a team we really like and also just kind of kick it and drink a couple beers. Yeah, in that aspect, I definitely see where you got that vibe from.
Yeah, that's funny though, because like when I was there, I was like, I really barely drank because it was so friggin' hot under that sun. I was like, forget this, I'll go to Old Town at night and just do that.
I mean, I spent an extra like $1 on my beer to make it a summer shandy instead, because apparently Leinenkugel's is considered premium compared to like Bud Light. So like, well,
every time I went, I was faced with the problem. And by the way, my buddies that do this annual spring training trip just got back yesterday. This is their weekend. This past weekend. Of course, I didn't go again for the seventh year in a row. I'm going to go ahead and not complain about it too much. But when I used to go, we had this tradition where on Friday and Saturday Friday we would see a normal game. Saturday was where we went to the Tent of Sin, quote-unquote. And that was the right field pavilion at Scottsdale Stadium, in which,
we had
the whatever it
so
costs,
expensive,
you know, $100 or whatever it is, you know? Well, that was back in the day. I don't know if it's more expensive now.
It's around that still.
But they did that again this year.
$10-$120 or something.
Yeah, but we have a friend who hooks us up and he gets us behind the scenes. We get to meet the players and all this stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so we would go out in those right field pavilions and, you know, they have all the cocktail tables set up and the hot dogs, all you can eat, you know, popcorn, nachos, whatever. And then all you can drink beer. For $100. So, of course, what do? You're trying to nail as much as you can. You're like, I paid $100 for this motherfucker. I'm going to drink and eat as much as I possibly can. And so it was always a competition. No one cared what the hell that was going on in the game. It was like, how many beers have you had? You know, we're in the fourth inning. I've had 8. Oh, dude, you're 3 behind me. Come on. You know, pick it up. So, and it was always a challenge of like who could drive back to the hotel after that game, because it was always on Saturday night, because then we'd all be hungover Sunday, because we all just, you know, were trying to get our money's worth. Sunday we'd watch the 12 o'clock game, barely drink a beer, maybe a couple, you know, just to kind of put the, you know, a little dog hair on the, exactly, on the hangover, and then fly out that evening. But man, so many memories from spring training. I mean, you know, for any listeners out there that haven't ever been, I mean, it's something that you need to do at least once. It is an absolute rite of passage. It is.
You're under no obligation to drink 15 beers in a game, but you really should go and watch.
It's spring break.
Not
for
watch
adults.
Other people doing it, but that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, it is. It's spring break for adults. Yeah, everybody's just like, whatever.
Yeah, I had a group of women next to me who were from the San Francisco area that had come down as a group. And it was they all had like kids that knew each other and so on. First thing they'd gotten all to all go and hang out and not have any of the kids with them in like 10 to 15 years. And there they were at a spring training game, drinking beer and yelling a lot, and, you know, as you do. And I was like, yep, that is definitely adult spring break right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fort Havasu, eat your face off.
Houseboats be damned.
I definitely just mixed a couple of like spring break locations into one statement. I really don't care.
And it's in Arizona, so.
Sure.
All right. Well, let's wrap this bad boy up. Any last bits of info you guys have from spring training? Any little nuggets of info? Anything?
Bueller?
Casey McGee apparently looks decent on routine plays at third base. That's really all we could ask for.
He looks good. He looks good on other. He had an inning like Sunday where he like charged one and then he had to go to his left for one. And
I did see that one play where he had run in, he barehanded a ball and threw the guy out by half step. Is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, if he's got that kind of facility with bare hands, that's already good.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I know that other fat guy was nimble on his feet, but it'll be nice to see somebody who's actually pretty athletic at the third base position.
It'll be different.
Yeah, Santa Cruz native himself, by the way. Grew up a Giants fan. So
Santa Cruz native with a faint southern accent now.
Yeah, I don't get that, but whatever.
Yeah, you pick a thing or two up.
Maybe it was the pot. Who knows?
He's going to serve as the Hudson Bumgarner translator for us now, I think, probably.
That's awesome.
Did you guys see the Carhartt commercial with Bumgarner?
No.
I have not seen it, no.
Oh, I got to find it. There's a minute commercial of Bum chopping down a tree with an axe. And gets to it. And he makes some comment about how he doesn't want sissy hands. You got to work with your hands if you're going to keep your hand-eye coordination together. No. I'll find it and link to it in the
God, this is going to be
something. Okay, that sounds epic.
I don't even know what something it's going to be, but it's going to be something. That seems like a good note to tie it up on, right? Ladies and gentlemen, Madison Bumgarner cuts down trees so he doesn't have sissy hands.
Freaking, he's like George Washington now. What the hell?
Jesus Christ. I mean, that's pretty accurate, yes.
Yeah.
Basically is.
All right. Man. Well, anyway, glad we could record for you guys. It's been a few weeks since we recorded, but we're going to be ramping it up here soon. We're, approaching the regular season. We're going to be scheduling our season preview that we record by tradition before the season starts. We're going to be submitting our predictions for how many wins the Giants are going to have this year. Hopefully it'll be more than 50.
Ben will be terribly wrong as usual. Looking forward to it.
Be okay that I nailed it last year with 88.
You did.
So I was happy with that. People thought I was crazy, but ended up working out well. But anyway, yeah, we typically record at AT&T Park or a bar in proximity of that. We usually have a couple of special guests, a couple of ladies join us, whatever. So look forward to that. You can always follow us at TorchCast on Twitter. Follow our blog at TorchCast.com. We're also available on Facebook. You can follow all of us collectively at TorchCast, or you could also follow Eric at Two Out Hits, Ben at Fried Duck, myself at ChadK21, and for the absent Willie at Willie Dills. He watched the Warriors absolutely destroy the Washington Wizards. That was pretty cool. So hopefully they're going to go far in the playoffs this year. As always, the Giants are an enigma and going to fuel us with a lot of speculation and frustration, yet they always end up satisfying all of our needs and desires as baseball fans every year. So anyway, for Eric and for Ben, we're signing off. I'm Chad, and thanks for listening to the TorchCast. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.